My name is Lambert Marksman. I'm a volunteer here at WBAI, and I do a little bit of everything.
And this is Richard Antones, and I work in development.
We want to thank the volunteers so very much for helping to support this station during our recent pledge drive.
We know it wasn't always easy, and that's all the more reason we want to let you know how much we appreciate your help.
It gives me great pleasure to see people so devoted in making this drive possible. We really learn to appreciate you, and we know how important you are as volunteers to this station.
So feel free to reach over your left shoulders and give yourselves one pat on the back.
And please send in your pledge.
Oh, can't they?
I guess they could.
Do you want a wake-up call replaced by snooze alarm?
No, but WBAI isn't going to vanish just because one subscriber is a little slow in paying his pledge, is it?
You really want to test that theory?
I think I'll pay my pledge to WBAI.
Pay your pledge to WBAI. Send your check or money order to WBAI Pacifica, Post Office Box 11445, Church Street Station, New York, New York, 10277.
To High Five, WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial, New York.
On Wall Street, I'm sharp today, boys, especially your rookies. Nick Lee, next boost up 90 points last night. We expect heavy Japanese buying on the opening. Hermes 1000, deals and sales that you make those 350,000 before convenience. Get on the horn with your institution, I'll report on their appetite. And all you utilities are our top priority today.
And welcome to Let Him Talk. I'm Paul DiRienzo with Miss Joan Marie Moosey. Our number is 212-209-2900.
Call us up.
We're ready to take your calls here on Let Him Talk. And
I sent out the wrong phone number in my first...
Well, hopefully they'll realize it's 2900 and not 2955, which is a great number to leave messages, but
yeah,
not the one to get on the air.
I sent a correcting email,
right.
So I hope everybody got it.
We have to thank Carmine Vitello, who participated in our listserv. And Carmine is one of the best writers in New York.
And if you want to get onto our email list, which every week I send out an announcement about the show and a list of free events in New York City for the coming week. And you can do that by going to our website, which is pdr.autono, that's AUTONO.net.
Right. And let's go through some of the music that we listened to. Before all the public service announcements, we listened to Ibrahim Ferrer from the Buena Vista Social Club and Mami Mi Gusto. And before that, we listened to
Lightfoot.
And I don't know if I can say the word F the Treaty, The White Man's Greedy. It's a good one. And before that, we listened to Mumia Abu-Jamal, All Things Censored, and his Rap on Rap, and somewhere in there, I don't know if I had them all in order.
Right, after
that. Yeah, and then at the top, we listened to Grandmaster Flash, Mel Mel and the Furious Five, and Beat Street, and before that, White Lines, Don't Do It. And I think that's pretty much everything we've played.
Yeah.
All right, and we'll be playing more music later on, maybe some more selections.
I wanted to make an announcement, too. I have a bunch of free events this week that are pretty interesting, but I also wanted to mention that one of the friends of Let Him Talk, Davidson Garrett, who everybody might remember from the McBurney Y struggle, is going to give a poetry reading this weekend on Saturday at noon at the Lesbian and Gay Community Services Center. That's 1 Little West 12th Street. And that's noon on Saturday. There's a small donation, but you get free continental breakfast with bagels, coffee, and juice. So that's noon on Saturday at the Lesbian and Gay Community Services Center. Davidson Garrett, our friend who was one of the leading spokespeople in the McBurney Y struggle, along with Octavio Gonzalez, Jane Van Ingen, Carol Rosenfeld, and Steve Turtell, are going to be doing readings in celebration of Pride Month, and it's called In Our Own Right, WRIT.
Mm-hmm. And we, of course, will be attending Saturday's rally starting at 11 a.m. in Washington Square Park, marking 20 years of AIDS.
And that goes to...
they're marching
to
Bryan Park. Oh, yeah.
That's right, where there will be a big rally. It's 11 a.m. on Saturday. Donate the dollars, treat the people, drop the debt, keep on marching. Stop global AIDS now.
And you're on the radio.
Hello?
Hi. Yeah, I was away all winter, and I kind of learned all I knew about the Pacifica problems from some of the late night shows, especially yours. And I came back about 3-4 weeks ago from being on a solar tour in Nicaragua, amongst other things.
What's that
and,
mean, a solar tour?
Well, it was a solar cultural tour where we got to put a solar panel on a school in a remote village.
Which real village?
Totogalpa.
Yeah,
near Totogalpa. I'm drawing a blank on the name of the village right now. That's how remote
it was.
Right,
but that sounds
up past in the northeast or up past. Yeah, I've been to Nicaragua.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out where.
It was outside of Totogalpa, just a little tiny place.
Right. And well, explain to people where that's at.
North of Esteli.
Mm-hmm.
North
Esteli, I remember Esteli, the San Francisco of Nicaragua, basically.
Oh, there's a lot of memorials to the revolution there. There are places with bullet holes still in the walls and a whole museum, art gallery, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really generally impressed to see that the spirit of the revolution is very much alive. And even though, you know, there's sort of a guy they call Gordoman, the fat guy, the fat one, not to disparage people's physical aspects at all, but that's what they call him because he's a very greedy guy who's in power. But the Sandinistas are very strong and in charge of a lot of the municipals, and you see the black and red flags everywhere. So it seemed like things, people were hurting less. You know, they kind of, but they haven't really lost a lot of what they fought for, is the impression I got with my very limited Spanish. And they're much more into solar and renewable energies than in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I was actually a little concerned about was that when I got back, I kind of heard that, well, maybe this stuff with Pacifica really wasn't bad, and maybe the problem was really that just a bunch of people who, you know, were over 50 and therefore should be pushed off the bridge were, you know, trying to assert power, and that the Pacifica situation really isn't so bad, and that everyone who criticizes it is a racist, including people like Mumia Abu-Jamal and the late Samori Marksman.
Mm.
And I'm kind
sounds
of
like you have a position
what?
Already worked out in your head about this.
Well, I mean, I'm just, you know, I was away, and I called up one day when they had Amy Goodman not on the air, and I said I was wondering what happened with Amy Goodman, and they kind of nastily hung up saying, well, keep wondering. I'm saying, what? I mean, what is going on? And now I hear that sort of like all the other...
How about this?
People,
you got email?
I'm only just starting to get email. I'm not into computers that much. But
we cannot discuss this on the air. Let me tell you. Let me ask you this, though.
Sort of
have you been listening?
Right.
Do you listen to Amy Goodman? Have you listened to Amy?
Well, she's
recently?
Back on now. Yeah.
Right, right. So there's no problem there.
And
have you heard any major changes in the on-air?
Well, you know, not as much as I was afraid of, but I'm still wondering
can
why
you, can you possibly assume that that you can't believe everything you read on the Internet?
Well, I'm basically going by what I heard from you months ago, and I'm wondering why you're like...
Oh, I get it. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, I was away.
Have a good night.
Really, explain.
Have a good night. Thank you very much.
Why don't you explain this stuff? I mean,
I have explained it in depth. Absolutely in depth.
Yeah, but I mean, if it's let them talk, then why not?
Are you not talking?
Yeah.
And I have discussed it quite extensively.
But,
matter of fact, the problem is that when I find that there's a number of people, a small number of people, who do insane things like transcribe 45 minutes of my show, put it on the Internet, and then discuss it as if I was part of management. You know, let's face it, man. There's a bunch of people, a small group of people, who feel that they've lost out in an internal power struggle and are trying to take it out by targeting me because, you know, they think that I'm weak and vulnerable, you know, being only a half-time guy here and having expressed the fact that I think that Utrice Lead is a fine leader. So I'm not going to allow myself to walk into that. Let me tell you this. Are the Sandinistas still in power?
They're in power in the municipal
But
election.
They're not in power in the federal government there,
no,
right?
No, and they're
they ran in an election and they lost, right?
Well, there's another
They ran in an election and they lost, right?
Well, when the
and they did. I was there. Come on, they ran in an election and they lost, right?
Right.
And they obeyed the mandate of the election and they stepped out of power, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Maybe the people here could learn from that.
So
see you later. Bye. You're on the radio.
Hello.
Yep. You're on the radio.
Hello.
Oh.
Yeah. All right. How you doing?
I don't know how long you was going to let the phone ring on me, man. Damn. Yo,
well,
man.
You're on now.
Yo, you sound like 100 times better than you did last week, man.
Well, what happened last week? What sounded bad about it?
I don't know, man. You just sounded like...
I was tired, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe tired. You just sounded like you was in a bad mood.
Well, yeah, I got beat up.
Tony
was out of town. That's true.
Yeah.
Also, I was going around with a shiner out to here, if you can, hit in the head in my own workplace.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's it.
Right.
I didn't hear that part.
Oh, yeah, man. Somebody came in here and punched me in the face.
Oh, that's bull. Well, let me stop. Don't let me start cursing. I mean.
Yeah, that's all right.
Then
they tried to get me arrested, which failed miserably because, of course, the evidence is all against the guy. So, fortunately, I don't believe in going to the police, so I'm not pressing charges.
Yeah. Well, you know, man.
As the police detective said, there's nothing I hate more than a man who comes in after a fight with mud on his face to complain to the cops. As the detective said to me.
You know, what do you expect from the cops?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, you just got to move past that stuff, man.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people is bugging out. They love the station, you know. That's all good, but, man, you just got to, I don't know, man. I don't move past it. You know, when I heard Amy Goodman was fired, I was like, what? But then they brought her back. So I was like,
wasn't fired.
It's never fired.
Don't
not
believe
fired,
what you see here on the internet, because it's happened.
Not fired, but, you know, like, taking off.
Tom Whisker, another programmer here, I was sitting in a meeting, and he referred to the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire, when a faction was defeated in battle or in a political struggle for control, they had the honor to at least commit suicide.
Well, I don't think, you know, nobody...
we don't need the opposition to commit suicide.
No, we don't. They can go somewhere else, you know. I mean, they could even be there. You know what I'm saying? I don't have anything against the other people who are against, you know...
I guess I didn't either until they punched me in the head.
Well, ain't nobody put their hand on me, so I can't, you know... I'm sort of, like, subjective right now, but
right.
I can dig your point of view. But, you know, I believe, man, you just feel better because you've been playing some nice music.
That could be it, too. I'm in a better mood.
That did sound good.
Right.
Yeah, man, the greatest rapper that ever lived, you know?
Yeah.
One of the best... Like, you know, music groups out there, Buena Vista and all that.
How did you like Lightfoot?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They're good, right?
Definitely. Play more.
Yeah, I love them.
Lightfoot's great. I got a whole CD here and stuff.
Yeah, man, I can't even find it. So, you know, but anyway, you know, I just wanted to call and thank you for doing that, man. You know?
All right, thank you.
Greatest rapper that ever lived, bro, Melly Mel. You know?
There he is. I know. That's really most political cutting-edge stuff.
Yeah,
now,
man.
20 years later.
And would you believe that was 1983?
Yeah, isn't that incredible?
That he rapped about that stuff?
Yeah. And it's like, still fresh today.
Right, it's almost like Malcolm, you know, rapping about stuff 30 years ago.
Right.
And here it is coming to fruition today, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable, man. But, yo, you keep your head up, man.
All right, thank you.
All right, you and Joe.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
All right.
Good night.
You're on the radio.
Hello.
You're on the radio.
Hello.
9 mistakes this morning reading the news.
Who are you?
I'm a listener.
What's your name?
Harold.
And where are you calling from?
New York, Manhattan.
How old are you?
Sigmund Freud about making mistakes in reading. He says...
This is like a personal attack type of thing.
It's not a personal attack.
Just the tone of your voice.
It sounds like nearly hysterical.
You sound like a person who's basically a hysterical loser who knows that they've lost, who's trying to get some cheap shots in because they lost. I mean, that's what you sound like. I mean, like, you know, you're on the air by my... allowing you to be on the air.
Yes.
Let's face it.
Go ahead.
I could cut you off in a second, and I'm still on the air. So that means that, you know, your side is at my beck and call. So, of course, you're attacking me. That's the only out you have. And you hate it, you know. You hate that reality, but it's a reality you're going to have to get used to.
No, you do.
You're on this air at my beck and call.
Okay.
You know that as well as I do, right? You are.
Right. But let you talk. It's not let him talk.
But, you know,
you talk.
What, they make your personal attack?
It's not let them attack, darling. Let them talk. We're trying to have a nice conversation.
Yeah.
Not a...
Yeah. And he is on my beck and call. You're on the radio.
Hello.
Good morning, Paul, and
Hi.
Good morning, Joan. Listen,
Hi.
I don't usually call. I rather listen to what's going on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
However, as being as old as I am and having been involved in a lot of things, I picked up long time ago, I think these poor people are that lost. They really want to try and destroy the whole station.
Of course.
That's what they're all about. They're not about sitting down amicably and discuss any kinds of things that could be settled. That's not where they're at. They want to destroy the whole damn
right.
WBAI.
And that's the root of why I get angry.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's the root. Maybe you're right. I blabber on more than I should.
No, and you know, I think it was about 10 weeks ago I got Brother Shine and I told him, I said, you know, we've been bamboozled. These people on the left and the right, whatever. They all into this part. When they lose, they want to destroy.
Yeah.
That's about the size of it. And
that's what it's come down to. And what's funny is that they'd all still have shows for the most part, you
yeah.
know, except,
yeah.
you know, if they had been reasonable at the whole thing. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, I worked with Valerie for 10 years, you know, and if she had, you know, accepted the very, very reasonable offer that was made by Pacifica, everybody would still be on their air and she'd have a national job.
Yeah.
I just don't understand it.
Yeah, well, that's the way, but, you know...
People make their own decisions.
Yeah, you know. And there are many of us, excuse me, out here. You know, I'm not an idiot. I've been out here in this area over 75 years, but I don't like I rather listen, because by listening you learn much more. You keep up the good work. I enjoy you during
in the
morning show.
Oh, thank you. We have fun.
Santiago's great.
Yeah.
You guys do all right. What happened to Joan? She don't get up that early.
Every once in a while, he drags me out of bed.
Yeah.
I do, literally, at 5 o'clock in the morning. It's time to get up. We're going down to the station.
Right. But you guys keep up the good work and stand tall.
Thank you very
Thanks
much.
Thanks very much.
Appreciate
Bye.
It. I like that kind of support. Thank you. You're on the radio.
Hello?
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 Hi,
Hello?
You're on the air.
Are you there?
I just wanted to say that, I mean, this is not a personal attack, but you're so arrogant on the radio. Where do you get?
No, that's not a personal attack.
I'm not trying to be personally attacked, but
what are you upset about? I mean, what changes have happened here that upset you so much?
I don't know, but
you don't know, so you can't
right?
even say. Let's say, do you like WBAI? I mean, do you think it's like too left wing, and this is an opportunity to attack it? Do you realize that I found that the this movement has united such a broad array of different politics against the station? You have people who send me emails saying, yes, it's about time people stood up against the anti-Semitism of WBAI. Then I'll get another email from somebody who says, yes, we must stop Jewish control of WBAI. I mean, what do you people believe in?
Well, I don't know.
What do you believe in? I mean, it seems like the only thing you believe in is, like, get your friends back on the air and destroy WBAI. I mean, that's what unites you. That's what unites your group.
WBAI, you just, you know, who's trying to destroy the WBAI?
I mean, you're trying to destroy it. I mean, all you people. I mean, when a gang of people comes in here and tries to take over the control room and assaults an employee right in their workplace, I mean, what if that ain't trying to destroy WBAI? Or you have a guy who makes hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, Juan Gonzalez, working for Zuckerman, some corporate capitalist stooge newspaper, saying we should take down WBAI. I mean, give me a break. Why do you people want to destroy it so badly? I know why. Because it is an alternative voice. Because it is a strong, radical, alternative voice that will never back down in the face of you folks. I mean, yeah. I mean, give me a break. And of course it is. Tell me something. Are you going to tell me that this is about keeping radical politics on here? I don't think so. This is about keeping the voice of a small clique. You ever hear of, like, the... Well, you're making the personal attacks again. Ay vey. Give me, cut it out with the personal attacks. You're on the radio.
Hello.
Hi. You were asking earlier what changes there have been at the station since the...
No. You're breaking the gag rule. We can't discuss that. I asked that other person. I didn't ask you. You're breaking the gag rule.
So it was a rhetorical question.
You're breaking the gag rule.
You weren't interested in getting an answer to that.
Because I know the answer to it. I don't need the answer from you. I'm going to tell you what the answer is.
Oh, you tell me what the answer is.
Right. Well, how would you know? How would you know?
Well, because I'm a listener, I can tell you what.
Do you listen to 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, WBAI?
No, I don't listen 24 hours a day.
So how would you know? I mean, you don't only can know it from reading on the Internet, and therefore your information
is... I don't read on the Internet. I listen to the radio, and I can judge based on that.
Oh, yeah, you can judge based on that.
Are you interested in hearing the answer to the question that you asked or no?
Not from you, but I'll let you talk anyway.
I don't really
have much respect for your opinion.
Because my opinion...
Because you're part of the personal attackers. I got assaulted here, and you're not willing to get up and to... denounce me getting assaulted in my workplace, so therefore, why should I respect your point of view?
But I'm not talking about an attack on you.
That's what I'm talking about, and that's what I want to hear. I want to hear your denunciation of somebody attacking me in my workplace.
I don't know the facts.
All right, you don't know the facts, then you're a fool. Then you're a fool. It happened. That's the facts. You're a fool.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.
You're on the radio.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. Could you mention who the other side is?
What other side? There isn't any other side. There's us, and we're having fun, and a handful of people who are a bunch of sore losers who lost an election and are trying to now destroy the station because they lost an election.
So can't you mention the names on the air who's trying to...
We have a gag rule. We're not supposed to do that.
Oh, can the gag coming from whom?
No, they have a gag rule, and it's a good idea, you know? It's a good idea. Don't you think it's a good idea? I haven't heard anybody really. I probably break it more than anybody does in the whole station.
Okay,
I do. I walk right over the gag rule many times, and I did in the last previous administration as well.
Okay, so aren't you getting special treatment?
No. Oh, I see. That's the point. People are being you know why? Because I'm a very intelligent guy. People recognize that. I'm an extremely intelligent guy, and I can carry it.
Okay.
Everybody knows that I approach it fairly, and I'm trying to get to the truth. All right? I'm not going in there with any sort of weird, bizarre, tripped-out, hidden agenda like so many other folks. I'm not here trying to protect my show because I live in fear that I'll be removed because I don't really have a right to the show because I wasn't appointed to it. I took it over when somebody else retired. All right?
Okay.
Like a lot of people. I don't make money off of my show, like a lot of people.
So
I don't have a hidden agenda. I'm not part of any political party that's trying to take over the station in order to promote their elections, themselves in a mayor's election. I'm not trying to do that. I don't sit in a room with a bunch of people after assaulting and violently assaulting people in their workplace and laugh about how great it was. So therefore, yeah, I have a little bit moral righteousness. I am morally over some of the people involved here.
So,
and that does give me power to do a few things. You're right.
Okay, so what are you doing?
I'm morally superior.
Okay, so what are you doing about the assault?
To what? What am I doing about the assault? Yeah. Nothing. I don't go to the police. I don't believe in the police.
So when...
I don't go to the police.
Yeah, when that...
I don't.
But when that...
It's only people who seem to be supporting the opposition who run to the police, the so-called radicals who run to the cops. Do you think... And it did nothing, you know what? The cops laughed in their face. Not only did the cops laugh in their face, but guess what? All those ugly, hateful emails are now in a file in a detective's office that never were there before. Not because I took them there, but because I responded to a complaint. And you know what they said, what the officer said when she saw the ugly, vicious attacks on me?
What?
She was going to arrest the guy. And investigate you people.
What did you expect was going to happen?
Answer the question. What did you expect would happen?
I guess, whatever, you know.
It blew up in their face.
Right.
Goodbye. You're on the radio.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Paul.
Hi.
I really think you're kind of overreaching here.
Oh, yeah? Well, I got hit in the face. You didn't. You don't know what you're talking about. You're on the radio.
Hello?
Paul, I think I'm going to give you a breath of fresh air. The
Thank
time
you.
They are changing.
Yeah, sure are.
Okay. You know, things are not always what they may appear to be, what people would have other people believe. A case in point that could be considered somewhat analogous, and that's the way the American media has been covering the so-called Russian government takeover of NTV. And the fact of the matter is that the former owner of NTV is a corrupt oligarch who owes his creditor, a state agency, tens of millions of dollars, which he defaulted. And in a capitalist society, which Russia is, if the owner in such a situation defaults, you know what? Takeovers of that type occur. And the fact of the matter is NTV, prior to the takeover, was far more hard-hitting of Russian society and government than all the major media
networks. Did you hear Boris Kargolitsky when we had him on the morning show?
No.
I knew you didn't hear it because it was so great, and I knew we would hear from you if you had.
He was saying exactly this?
No, actually, he said that basically what happened is Putin is in power, so he changed the leadership of NTV because through Gazprom, even though it's allegedly a private company, Gazprom basically controls.
Yes.
The government, or the government controls Gazprom, and whoever is the president of Russia decides the leaders of these institutions ultimately.
I mean,
if not the leadership directly, the politics, definitely.
Yeah, you know, that's,
and what that creates is a situation analogous, I think, to what happens here. What happened here is like you change the leadership, and a lot of people have to either adapt to the new politics or quit. I mean, it doesn't leave you much of a chance.
Well, choice. But the fact of the matter. Fact of the matter is, Paul and Joni, the guy who's the CEO is this Russian-American Boris Jordan.
Right.
And he, by the way, is a critic of Putin. Okay, but he's the CEO. He pledged to the former administrative staff, "I'm not going to interfere. You do your thing. I want you to stay on." Now, instead of taking him up on his word, you know what they did? They martyred themselves. They prostituted themselves to the Western media. But you know, the majority of the people on NTV remained there. And you want to know something? It's still a very hard-hitting news network. They have that puppet show, which is as sarcastic as ever. So what we're hearing is a lot of Machiavellian crap. The reason why CNN, for example, has been so negative on this takeover is because CNN was negotiating with Grushinsky, the corrupt oligarch who had owned the station and defaulted. They were negotiating a deal for those two, so it served CNN's interest to make it look like, this rude government takeover. But let me tell you something. The BBC is government-owned. I don't hear no one complaining about that. And the BBC, if you study the BBC when it deals with issues like NATO and Britain, it's very one-sided and very sympathetic to Anglo-American causes. So I find it very amusing how you should judge a media, not how it covers other societies and other governments, but how it covers its own society and own government. And if you look at it from that vantage point, the five major American networks flunk big time, and NTV, even to this day, is far more critical of Russian society and government than the five American networks are of American government and society. And I'm really sick, for example, the coverage, Senate Foreign Relations Committee on C-SPAN, you have Jesse Helms criticizing GW for not talking about Chechnya. But does Jesse Helms talk about Turkey's treatment of the Kurds and Israel's treatment of the Palestinians?
Of course not. What about the Chechnya thing? But that goes back to what you were saying about NTV, because the whole thing that Kargolitsky was talking about is balancing, like, the changes that happened occurred to when and if you supported or didn't support the Chechen War or the Second War or the Third War. In other words, there was two separate Chechen Wars?
Yes.
And that the Yeltsin group supported along with Putin the first war, and then the Putin group pulled out of supporting the second war. Is that what happened?
No. Well, actually, kind of reverse. In the first war, okay,
right.
NTV was actually critical, as was much of Russian society, because it was felt that it was poorly planned or maybe something else could have been done. But what happened was, in 96, there was a ceasefire arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is the Chechens violated the ceasefire arrangement. But in the West, we didn't hear this. Instead, we heard these claims that there were these terror attacks in Moscow and Petersburg, and no one knew for sure who did it. That's true, Paul Joni, audience. But what the American press censored was the fact that the Chechens tried to take over Dagestan by force, that Chechen terrorists, for example, took over a hospital, taking
hospitals. So you said in the second war there was more support of the war.
Yes, and NTV was supportive, too. But I want to make another point, too, about the previous NTV regime.
Now, Kargolitsky considered both wars to be part of Russian imperialism in that region.
Oh, God, well, next time we have Boris Kargolitsky on.
And then he basically, I mean, he's a leftist. He's obviously a socialist, communist-type guy.
Is he Ukrainian, or is he Russian, or what is he?
I think, he was in Moscow. I don't know. I assumed he was Russian, but...
Okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, he's definitely a leftist, and from a leftist perspective, he opposed the Chechen War first and second. But what he was pointing out was that whether you supported the first or second really depended on where you stood in this political struggle for power between Yeltsin and Putin.
Okay, well, the Yeltsin people supported the both wars, and I think the Putin people, by and large, supported both wars as well. I want to say this, though. The NTV, the prior regime, I don't know if Karl Levitsky made this point.
Boris Kargolitsky.
Okay. Did he make this point that regime that's considered to be democratic and Western-leaning, do you know those people basically censored the communists during Yeltsin's presidential campaign in 96? They blatantly practiced press censorship. So for them to now carry the cloak of freedom, I think, is ridiculous. And as far as this gentleman you had on being a leftist, he might be a leftist, but I'll tell you right now, his view, from what you told me about Chechnya, is in the minority of the Russian political spectrum. And this is another problem I have with the way Russian analysts are basically selected in this country. It's always to manicure, to serve complementary with how American the West.
Well, remember, though, I had we had that punk band on from Moscow.
Yeah, they were pretty cool. You know, I don't.
They were pretty. I mean, they were doing anti-war music and songs.
Okay, look,
nobody could deny they weren't like Russian all the way. You know.
No, okay, I can even though I don't agree with them. You know what? I can respect them because I'm sure they're consistent all the way around. But there's a new marketplace now where you have these Russians working for. For example, Itorgi, this magazine. Who owns Itorgi? It was Newsweek. And they have bourgeois Western views. And so when we see them on, like, Nightline or Chris Matthews or the NewsHour, you know, this is how they would like to have Russians think. But to get a mainstream Russian on in the West, you're very rarely going to have it. Or if you do, they get trampled viciously. I saw this on C-SPAN. I don't know if you saw it, the Carnegie Endowment. Sponsored this panel discussion where they had two members of the Duma, and against them were Brzezinski and Talbot, and it was very disrespectful adolescent how the panel, especially Strobe Talbot, treated those two. If Talbot was treated that way in Russia, he would be screaming in the Western media all over. He was arrogant. He was disrespectful. He said, you know, Russia's basically a piss-pot poor country, and they have to do what they're told, and if they don't like it, too bad.
Well, Boris Kargolitsky, the guy we had on, straight up said that Russia has long become a colony of Germany.
Excuse me?
Russia has become a colony of Germany.
Well, they're depending right now on trade with Germany.
He called it a colony.
Well,
you know, considering that I went to see that film, Enemy at the Gates, what a sad turn of events.
Well, but you want to know something?
Did you see Enemy at the Gates?
I didn't see it yet.
Quite a movie. Woo! You got to see it on the big screen.
I will see it, but the point is this. You know, Russia and Germany historically have had centuries of positive trade. St. Petersburg, for example, is the Berg ending, is to honor, you know, German-Russian relations, if you may. There are a number of ethnic Germans in Russia whose ancestors came centuries ago as part of sort of like economic cooperative development.
Right.
Do you know that...
However, I did see that movie about Eisenstein's last movie, the one about the Teutonic Knights.
on Lake Lagoda, I think
Alexander
it is.
Alexander Nevsky.
Nevsky, right.
Right.
Now, that seemed like they had some problems with the Germans back in the day.
Well, historically, every European country has one time or another. Hey, we fought two wars with Britain, and it's interesting. See, this is the propaganda. We're told that Britain is this great ally. We fought two wars against Britain. Britain sided with the Confederacy during the Civil War. Russia supported this country during the Revolution, during the Civil War. Russia never fought any wars against this country.
You know the first American ever to go to Russia? John Quincy Adams. He was the ambassador.
Prominent American, yes.
Right. Oh, there might have been others, but very few people traveled that far in those days. That
yeah,
been
but,
a,
but the point is just...
And, you know, he was shocked by it. He didn't like it.
Well, fine.
He couldn't... Well, you know why? Because he couldn't believe that, you know, there the czars made everybody grow the same crop and stuff like that and controlled what they could grow, and that was so un-American to his way of thinking. Where
no,
everybody could,
here was far more democratic with
yeah,
slaves.
You could grow anything you wanted. It was slaves,
I mean,
right.
You know, Russia had a lot of slanty-eyed yellow people, but
yeah.
I didn't see them making slaves out of them like was done in this country to people whose melanin was darker. I always find it fascinating how Chris Matthews can say things like, the United States invented human rights. This is part of the arrogance of this country that I can't stand because it's based on ignorance.
Well, isn't it true that the United States and Russia both ended, Russia ended serfdom about a year or two even before the United States ended slavery?
Yes, yes.
And they didn't even need a civil war to do it in Russia.
Yes, yes.
I mean, they were getting uptight with the peasant rebellions everywhere, but they basically had a commission and freed all their serfs within a two-year period or something.
And there was no death penalty as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
There was no death penalty, even under the period of the dreaded czars. And a guy like Lenin, for example, when he was exiled, he was given his own lodge, plenty of paper and pen and whatnot. I mean, he was kept away from the masses, and I don't support that. But he wasn't exactly, you know, the stereotypical outright executed or put in some sort of torture chamber cell.
Mostly Russia's problem was they couldn't keep up with the Western technical advancement under the czars. And
well, I got to say something about that. Russia missed the Renaissance because of being occupied by the Mongols, just like the Serbs and Orthodox Christians in the Balkans were occupied by the Turks. They missed the Renaissance. Now, we're told that that is bigotry to say that. But then these same people say in a rather bigoted way that Orthodox Christianity stunted those people. I would consider that to be bigotry. And the fact of the matter is, from 1861 to 1913, Russia agriculturally and industrially advanced more proportionally than any other country during that period. You don't believe me? Read Lenin's work on Russian capitalism that I believe was published in 1889. If you read that book and you didn't know it was Vladimir Lenin, you'd think I wrote it. I mean, he was bragging about how his country was advancing. So in the last decades of the regime, there was tremendous progress. The problem was World War One. They were totally not ready at all. Hey, on the eve of World War One, Lenin basically gave up on revolution. Revolution came because of World War One. Had you not had World War One, I think Russia would have developed into a sort of like Sweden, a socialized system with a monarchy that was somewhat castrated with the constitution. That's where I think
like
Russia
Nepal
went. I'm sorry?
Like it wouldn't wind up like Nepal?
No. Russia Russia is a quote.
It sort of did, actually.
Well, no, not really.
Well, didn't they shoot the whole family? The royal family was shot.
Yeah, and you know the people there overwhelmingly denounced, including the Communist Party too. By the way, so I know there are some crackpots that are probably included in this dissident group that we've been touching on. You know, they probably think that was a bad idea. But you know, the fact of the matter is, the previous regime there was not, you know, the ogres they were made out to be. And the successor regime was far, far from being perfect, as we have, you know, unfortunately bore witness with millions of people, tens of millions of people who were persecuted. I mean, what the Nazis did was horrible, but another horrible facet of Soviet/Russian history is that just as many people died internally from that brutal period.
Well, that's very interesting. I have to say that when you see a movie like Enemy at the Gates, which of course is very anti-communist. I mean, you know, there's nobody who does anything that's positive, but at the same time, it has to tell a story about something that really did happen. And as much as you can put the wrong twist on it, you can't deny the courage.
And you know what the other fact is?
You can't deny that they pulled themselves together under unbelievably adverse conditions against an unbelievably superior military force.
Yeah, well, the fascinating thing about it, and it's similar to the Napoleon...
Something had to do it. Something motivated these people.
Yeah, well, it's Napoleonic, too, that is sort of relative. I don't know if they touched on in this movie, but it wasn't just Germans. You know, there were Hungarians... There were large detachments of Romanians. You had smattering of Croats, Bosnian Muslims.
People have been fighting the Nazis for a long time. One of the folks who went down to Spain to fight in the in the Spanish Civil War for the Republic, the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. I heard them describe it as when they got there, the Americans who got there in the Abraham Lincoln Brigade were basically, when it came to military stuff, pretty naive and. They were immediately thrown in with divisions of people from all the countries you mentioned who had already had years of bitter experience fighting the Nazis and are very, very, very strong fighters already.
Did you see this movie?
Long before even 1939.
Okay. Now, did you see this movie on the Spanish Civil War? I don't know the name, but I'll give you one scene where they basically describe a so-called Stalinist faction of the Republicans. Mm. And what they do basically is... they go after the anarchists.
Well, what happened, this is my understanding, all right, of the Spanish Civil War, is that the anarchists politically are the political movement of the middle class. Libertarians are the more conservative and the more leftist are the anarchists, in my opinion. But anarchists are the middle class people's revolutionary movement. The communists tend to be the proletarian, the factory workers, the lower economic group who they believe through Marxism is the fundamental group in society that'll lead the way to the future. Now then you throw into Spain the relationship with England, in which England had basically colonized Spain for many hundreds of years, and that Spain was basically a colony of England. Now you have the rise of this fascist regime that has ties to Germany at a time when England was fighting Germany, and you have the rising of a communist movement and an anarchist movement in Spain. Now, it's my understanding that the Russians didn't want to make trouble with the British and therefore held back in their support of total war in Spain. And because they wanted to, down the line, negotiate with the British to fight against Germany. Mm-hmm. And the British did not want a hyper-revolutionary situation. Mm-hmm. They wanted a rebellion against Franco, but they didn't want it to go too far that would undermine British control of Spain and piss them off against the Russians.
Right.
And that the anarchists not held back down by those, you know, ties... By international politics, wanted to go all the way, and therefore were denied. Even though they were, I guess, supplied with weapons, at some point the Russians started to hold back the weapon supplies.
Mm.
Now, I don't know who to blame: the realities of realpolitik, the British imperialists, Stalin. I don't know, or the anarchists. You know, the anarchists in Spain, they had their drawbacks. I mean, you know, they. Being that they didn't believe in government,
right.
Therefore no trial, no judge, no jury. Therefore, you know, you capture somebody, you execute them on the spot.
Yeah.
While the communists tend to believe in governmental structure.
Yes.
Trials, jails, punishment.
Yes, yes.
Well, as much as we might dislike that, the anarchist system is just, well, you know, you're unlucky, we're just going to shoot you. So I don't know how true that is, but it seems to be something I've read or heard about.
I've heard similarly with relation to Spain. By the way, you know, Tito did some time in Spain during the Spanish Civil War.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's an interesting character because he was a corporal in the Austro-Hungarian army, but when he became a dictator of Yugoslavia, he kind of downplayed it because he knew that the Serb component of the Yugoslav League of Communists would not be too happy to have that sort of, prop, if you may.
What do you mean?
It was well known.
Uh-huh, really?
He was half Slovenian and half Croat. And it was interesting, too, because he was called, I think it was the historian H.E.P. Taylor called him the last Habsburg or the red Habsburg.
Who, Tito?
Because even though he was a communist, his geostrategic thinking was very much like a Habsburg, which explains why the Serbs outrightly detested him. The only Croats who detested him were, you know, the real extreme right-wing extremists. Even this guy Tudjman, even though he sort of became a quasi-Nazi in his later years, he always had this high admiration for certain aspects of Tito. And as a matter of fact, I understand there's a movement in Croatia to have his body, his tomb, moved from Belgrade to Zagreb.
The capital of Croatia, huh?
Yes.
Tito.
He's seen, it's sort of like, it's a hybrid sort of phenomena we're seeing in post-communist Europe, where attempts are being made by both factions to sort of try to recognize both the good and bad of both previous systems.
Now, Albania was a Maoist country for a while, wasn't it?
Well, what it was, the foreign policy, Enver Hoxha was pissed off at the Soviets because he was an Albanian. He always looked at Yugoslavia, the Serb component, as being against his interests. And so what happened was, yeah, he went into bed with the Chinese. I don't know if he was so much ideologically a Maoist. I know internally it was a very oppressive Stalinist type of state. And he was interesting, too, because I remember listening to Radio Tirana in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And you know that he funded communist parties in exile. There would be like the Polish Communist Party in exile, and it was basically, you know, Albanian Chinese sponsored, you know, anti-Soviet sort of propaganda, if you may.
Right. And then, well, what happened was he seemed to slide into this thing they called dogmato revisionism. It was a term I read called dogmato revisionism.
You're talking about Enver Hoxha.
Yeah, right. That and then he became associated with the Communist Workers Party in the United States, or became associated with him?
Well, I don't know if...
There was like, the Maoists started to divide on whether they should support Enver Hoxha or not.
Yeah, well, during the Cold War, I could tell, like, whenever there was a Communist Party and would call itself the Communist Party of Australia or the Communist Party of Britain, but then at the end it would say Marxist-Leninist.
ML, right.
That
right.
was always a code word of being pro-Albanian and usually also pro-Chinese as well.
Right.
But, you know, towards the end when Deng Xiaoping made his peace with Carter, he also sort of had a cooling down with what you call China as well.
Right. And what happened? Well, then you had, because there were some folks who hung on to like the Gang of Four type of view, and those who felt that there were the reforms that Enver Hoxha, that Deng Xiaoping were making were rational reforms.
Yeah.
Well, who do you think wound up right? Because now, let's see, the hardcore Maoists are supporting Nepal and Peru, and the communism is pretty much gone from China.
Right.
It's turned into a capitalist state.
Right.
So the only hope the communists have right now is like Nepal.
Uh-huh. And, you know, the Enver Hoxha people basically are the people running the KLA.
Oh, really?
And they became great freedom fighters. There's this conservative congressman from Westchester, former Republican congressman, Joe Dioguardi.
Mm-hmm.
He's of Albanian descent. And this guy's a right-to-lifer, but he's in bed with Hasim Saci, whose family and himself were Enver Hoxha loyalists, but this guy is supporting them, and he claims to be a red, white, and true blue American conservative patriot.
Mm. And he's supporting a group that used to be front for the communists of Albania.
Yes, exactly.
But not anymore.
Exactly. Hey, how about monarchy making a comeback in Bulgaria?
Yeah, the monarchists won the election.
Yes, Bill Weinberg, you know, I made that point with him, and he cut me off as he usually does, and then says he wanted me to speak with him off the air about
it. I find you fascinating.
I gave him mouth.
You know as much as anybody I've ever talked to about this region. My friend Ivo, who's also been on Bill's show, I guess.
Oh, Ivo
Skorik. He's very knowledgeable too. God, we were talking to him about
this. Does he run?
What do you mean?
Okay, I saw his name in the New York City Marathon.
Oh, really? I wouldn't be surprised. He's a pretty athletic guy.
Okay, I bet you that's probably him, because how many people of that name? Yeah, there was something to do with the New York City Marathon, and his name was up there.
Oh, is he an athlete?
Well, we were discussing in the light of the little me being punched in the head here at the station, and somebody made the comment that, oh, leftists can't fight.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, right. And I mentioned that to Ivo, and he laughed, and he goes, that's what it used to be that way, too, in Yugoslavia. And he said, though, but when things got rough and everybody started fighting, we all had to, like, work out and stuff and learn how to fight.
You want to know something? My dad, okay, his dad worked for the Soviet government. He was not a communist, but he was a mineral engineer.
Uh-huh.
He lived as a kid briefly in Nazi Germany, and this was, like, in the early to mid-30s. And at that time, when they had political street fights, he told me the communists would always beat the crap out of the Nazis.
But back then, they lost it.
Yeah, but then, you know, there was this tragic turn of events. Yeah, it was a very interesting period, because he ran into a lot of Russian emigres who had fled from the revolution, and they were bad-mouthed, because there were a lot of Soviet Russians in Germany, because at the time they were both sort of ostracized nations, so there was a lot of interaction between the two countries.
Right. Well, it's sad to say that in certain circles, the concept of a leftist getting into a fight causes great mirth.
Yeah, but you know, I have to agree with you about this George Soros creep. He funds this group, the International Crisis Group and the Balkan Action Council, and they are stacked with people, Gene Kirkpatrick to Stephen Solars, and their coverage of the Balkans basically... It is, okay, and you know my policy...
You know, it's weird, because I like his position, Soros, on the drug war.
Right.
But when it comes to, like, democratizing Eastern Europe or what have you, it's scary.
No, what he is, basically, and especially when you look at his think tanks dealing with the Balkans, is it's blatantly, viciously anti-Serb. He does a nice job covering up the Bosnian Muslims and Croats and Albanians... never do any wrong. I mean, even Richard Holbrooke will admit to plenty of wrongdoing on the part of those entities. People employed in his organizations dealing with that say nothing about it. And I can't help but to imagine that this guy, even though he has some liberal trends, he also has an ugly side that you see among Hungarian revanchists, if you may, which is, you know, we want part of Transylvania, we want part of Vojvodina, we want this and we want that.
Right.
And he definitely has it in for the Serbs. I know that.
All right. Well, let's move on and give other folks a chance. Very interesting.
Take care.
All right. Take care.
A lot.
Bye. Mike, very knowledgeable guy.
You're on the radio.
Hello.
Greetings.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
Just pick up a little bit of a thread on your last talk before I get to what I originally called on, because you said so much. Most of it is over my head historically. I don't have that level of historical knowledge. But you spoke about the Spanish anarchists and how they would just shoot people. Well, to me, I mean, that betrays the spirit of what I would call righteous anarchism, which in the sense of...
Well, let me say this. Let me step back for a second. Those were difficult times. I mean, you have to realize, I mean, it's easy for us to talk in our world and... You know,
they were trying to survive, yeah.
Those were difficult, difficult times. I'll give them that. However, personally, I do take more of the socialistic view that we should have structure and a government, and we have to have rules, or else you wind up in situations where people are summarily executed.
Right. Let me put that in that framework, because if you think of anarchism as an opposition to monarchism, and that doesn't mean that the opposite of order is chaos. I think the opposite of order is freedom. But an organic freedom with justice. Freedom doesn't mean you can do whatever you want, like punching people and things like that, just because you're in the mood. Freedom means that you respect other people's individuality and you work with people in productive ways.
There it is. And well, what did I hear the other day? Somebody defined freedom. Jeez, I can't think of it. I heard it on the air here somewhere, and it was an excellent definition. It'll come to me. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so I just think that because
there's
a lot of
that's a good one. That, you're talking about individual freedom, the freedom, the right of an individual to exist and to have their beliefs and views and to pursue their lives without being impinged by others.
Right, but and that includes by the state or by the king.
Exactly.
Right. So and it's hard to do that in an organic way without some kind of structure. But that structure has to evolve and not be imposed. And it gets complicated when you have millions of people living in a country.
Yeah.
But in any event, getting back to an area, and you have my permission in advance. I won't feel ill of you because I don't want you to get in any trouble. I think you're a good guy, basically.
I'm not going to get in trouble with the management here. I'm going to get in trouble with the listeners because there's some very angry people there. They use the internet to exorciate me to no end, and I know, I know I should ignore it, but it's hard to.
Well,
as a matter of fact, I saw today there was a report by the Pew, the Pew Charitable Trust, and there was another group, the New Hampshire group in New Hampshire. They did a report on internet violence, sexual. What it is people who are harassed over the internet. And it said that, you know, people react. People don't like being harassed over the internet. I mean, like 30-40% of people become very distressed by it.
Right.
So anybody who does it knows that they have a good chance of distressing the person. That's one you can, by saying awful things about them in a way that they can't respond directly. And also, when it comes from people in your own community, you always have to have the fear of looking over your shoulder that somebody's going to act on these threats.
Right, that a psychic assault can be a physical assault.
Exactly.
Right.
So these folks who are attacking me on the internet are doing tremendous damage to me. They are, you know, I'll give them that. But at the same time, I'm going to learn. I'm going to stay strong, you know.
No, but they're not really doing damage to you in the sense that, if anything, it makes you dig in your heels.
Exactly.
You know, see, from my perspective, I actually disagree with a lot of what you say in terms of this whole Pacifica BAI conflict. However, I think that the tactics of your opposition, when they call in and interrupt and get nasty, that defeats their purpose. And it's a totally negative thing to do.
It obviates any possibility of discussing it.
Right.
That's the reality.
Which I believe there were multitudinous, and this is, I don't know if we disagree or agree on this, but right from the beginning, the evil Pacifica Empire was trying to negotiate right from day one. And folks just refused to. They took this up. Talking about digging in your heels. I mean, here people were offered incredibly good deals, deals to leave the station under very good conditions, deals to continue working for Pacifica in other areas for higher salaries, and instead, they took this, I don't know, this weird...
No compromise,
self-destructive attitude and thought that somehow that this would win.
Well, let me ask you this, and again, you have my advance permission to cut me off. I do not want to get you in trouble. But I do know that for a while there, you and Ms. Moosey were airing a lot of carts that used the Radio Atlantica.
Mm-hmm.
And the implicit,
I still do. I got them all here.
Okay, the implicit criticism was, and I think it's a valid one, that the board back then instituted this policy, which still exists, of becoming self-selective and non-democratic, which I think that you still disagree with, right? You think that's a bad thing.
But I think they've always been that way. My understanding is, see, this is Lou Hill, and you know, we're talking about the history of Pacifica here, and I don't claim to be an expert at it, and I'm sure every word I say will be transcribed and put on the internet, but let somebody transcribe it. It'll go into my book. Thank you for the transcriptions.
If you speak your truth, then you want it to be shared.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I want it to be shared at one level, but at the other level, I don't want it to be like...
Picked at
in a way that where it's not being done in a in an honest manner. I know that there's people have met and planned to get me. You know what I mean? I know that's going on. You know, I know that there is a small nub of people who've decided to make me the target of their attacks. It's pretty much common knowledge. It's come to me from people who've sat at the meetings where the discussions were made, and it's come to me in emails that I've gotten on these people's mailing lists that they don't even know I'm a member of.
Well,
so I know what's going on better than most people think.
But didn't the move to make the board self-selecting change things in terms of?